Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Simply Bitcoin IRL. Today, we have Jeff Booth, the one and only Jeff Booth. But before I bring him on stage, I want to give a shout out to the awesome Bitcoin company that makes this show possible, SwanBitcoin.com, built by Bitcoiners for Bitcoiners. Best place to stack sats. They incentivize dollar cost averaging and self-custody. What are you waiting for? Visit SwanBitcoin.com today. Anyways, I want to bring Jeff on stage. Jeff, I'm super thrilled and frankly super honored to have you on Simply Bitcoin IRL. You've been on the regular show before, but because of that specific format, it doesn't allow for basically just normal conversation. So I've really been looking forward to this.
Yeah, looking forward to it too. Just got off the ski hill.
Really? So I was just skiing as well. I was this very small town in Colorado called Telluride. I was there for about 10 days. Yeah. So that's awesome. Really, really cool. So Jeff, I'm going to rip off the Band-Aid right from the rip. And this is something that I've been debating in my head for the last 6 months, right? And frankly, the other side has either, you can call it propaganda, you can call it whatever it is, but I'm just going to ask you directly, do you believe inflation is necessary? And if not, why?
I don't believe that's true. I don't believe inflation is necessary. I think first you'd have to prove why would that be true? Why would money losing value each year be necessary for a productive economy? I know it's built. I know our economy is built that way, but I do not believe that's true at all. I think the productivity gains that humans naturally take on through finding new, better ways to solve problems would be broadly distributed to society in the best way without inflation. In other words, there'd be no theft in money. There'd be no transfer of money. It would raise some other, typically what governments like is, okay, what happens when in a downturn? How do we gain more control? How do we protect people? But what they do by doing that is they make these bubbles bigger, and they make the inevitable collapse of the bubble bigger as well. Whereas a system is designed to fail spectacularly. That's where we are today, unfortunately.
Yeah. So the other side would say basically, you know, to play devil's advocate, of course, because I completely agree with you.
Let's do that. Like, so it's easier to, what is the debate? And let's play as devil's advocate and we'll talk about it.
Yeah. Absolutely. So, because I agree with you, right? But they would say, right, like, how else do we incentivize people to spend?
Okay, well, let's deal with that one first. So I guess if you're saying that, you're assuming people will not spend unless there's theft in money. I don't believe that's true. So will they spend less? Will they save more? They'll save more. But will they still buy food? Will they still buy things they need? There's deflation today in consumer electronics. Consumer electronics get more powerful every year. And that means if you waited, you could buy more for less. Why don't people wait for a phone? Why do they buy a new phone when they want a new phone rather than keep on waiting forever and not go without a phone? So yes, there is an argument that says people spend more when their money is losing value because they're scared of that money losing value. That's a really terrible way to build an economy because it essentially says the only reason people will spend is because you're stealing their money if it's in savings. I don't believe I don't believe economies should be built that way.
So, and I agree with you, but, and then the other component is the government should have the ability to, you know, I said this at Pacific Bitcoin, right? I've been going down this rabbit hole really for the last 6 months. The government should have this privilege to create money for free that everybody else has to work for, right? That's really the other argument. And it's like the famous cliche saying, right? How will the roads be built, right? So what would be your response to that?
They would still be built, and this this some of these lines, and especially in Bitcoin, kind of get okay. There's black and white, no taxes. There should be no taxes. And I want to be careful of stepping in that, because we're a long way from the system that should be versus where we are today. But I personally, maybe that's a better way to say it. I personally would vote for a government telling me the truth and saying, we need this money to pay for these services that you require, that you want. I prefer not to vote for a government that is just theater, saying we're going to hide that we're stealing this much money in inflation, and we want this process. What I would advocate is on Bitcoin, you have governments designed around truth. You'd have governments, you have officials designed. Everyone has to tell the truth, and they might have a different way of solving a problem than you might want, but they would have to tell the truth on that, because there's no free lunch on the money, on making up money.
So could you elaborate on that a little bit? Because it's funny, Jeff, what I've noticed is a lot of Bitcoiners, we end up getting to very similar conclusions. We just approach it from different angles, right? A lot of people say Bitcoin is truth, and I fundamentally agree with that. And I think in this world of lies and chaos, it really provides this oasis in the sea of garbage. And that's really what I see it. Michael Saylor has the domain, right? Hope.com or hope.org. So I really agree with that. But why is it, Jeff, that governments would be forced to tell the truth? And I'll add another question to that. Is it even possible for governments to tell the truth today if they have access to a money printer?
Yeah, I tackle that in a different way. I say if the emergent complex behavior of all society, trade globally, the emergent complex behavior of all society was based on theft, and it is, what would the emergent complex society of society look like? What would the mirror image reflecting back to society look like? Who would win out of that game, and who would lose out of that game? And when you look at the world today, Bitcoin would call it clown world, it is hard to look at many things in the world today and not agree with that statement. It's clown world. Who would rise to the top in a world like that? Who would win in politics like that? Who would be cheerleading those politicians that would win in a world like that? And you just see a mirror reflection of the world we live in today, because it's based on an emergent complex behavior that's based on theft that has to get worse and worse and worse to save the system. The system is unsolvable from the system. And we all look through that same system, not realizing that us trying to make more money within that system actually makes that system worse. So all the incentives are aligned to that it gets worse and worse. On a new system that operates entirely, it's a 180 degree shift from the existing system. The existing system, you try to buy more and more real estate because the real value of the dollars is going down, and real estate is a store of value against that. So it's not necessarily that the real estate's going up. It's the dollars are going down, and the real estate is a store of value against that. In a different system, the real estate will fall to its utility value. So those two systems, one system, you get wealthy by saving and investing or creating value for others. And in one system, you get wealthy by investing and kind of building a financial infrastructure to take from others.
Yeah. And it's interesting you say that. It reminds me of the interview or the fireside chat that you had with Nat Brunell in Pacific Bitcoin. And it's this concept where the abundance of money forces everyone to basically be a part. I'm putting this in my own words, of course, to be a part-time investor just to retain their wealth, right? It's an unintended consequence.
Think about how many people that you do that are investors that the world looks up to that just when the Fed speaks, everybody stops and waits. The world waits for all of what everybody's going to say about the words that the Fed said. This is really just, when am I going to destroy money again? The value of money again, this whole thing, and how much power we give to the system trying to save our money that's being eroded, to create more money that's being eroded. Who's going to give me insight into that broken mess? And so that is still today largely what happens. I've just had to spend as little time. You'll notice even how much I tweet about that anymore. I just had to ratchet down my time in that whole nonsense, just because it's where it's going. It's going to get worse and worse. People are going to lose a bunch of money into that system, thinking that they've found a savior for a minute, and then it's going to switch on them. Well, Bitcoin is repricing that entire system over time, and that's where a lot of people get confused. They think, you and I have talked about this before, but they think of Bitcoin being priced in whatever fiat currency they have, and they think about the risk of Bitcoin, when it is in fact Bitcoin repricing that entire existing system that's actually happening.
Absolutely. So Jeff, you said something that, and again, I don't know why it was, I guess the old saying that there is no end to the Bitcoin rabbit hole, and then every couple of months you realize a different truth. But how is, and this is where I'm at currently, how could you make the argument that the US economy is not centrally planned? Because it's exactly what you said. If it's all based on what a gentleman has to say a Wednesday on every so often, how's that any different than central planning?
So communism and capitalism are the same system under printed money. And I wish that wasn't the fairy tale that we live in a free market. A lot of people want to believe that because they don't want to check their bias against what we're talking about right now. And often outside of Bitcoin, people who haven't gone down the rabbit hole are still stuck in there, and they still believe that they live in a free market. But if you actually ask a couple of questions like, what would happen if the Fed didn't manipulate interest rates or QE or add QE? What would happen to their wealth or their houses or everything? And if you poke on that, they'll realize that, okay, the system does require manipulation. Going there, but then they'll conflate those things and say inflation required for a productive economy. Because I think what's happening is it's such a shock to people's system. It's such a shock to a system that's provided their wealth their entire life, and they believed that they were living in a free market, that they don't want to face the facts that they don't. And so those systems get worse and worse. Capitalism and communism are the same system under printed money. It gets worse over time. And that centralization has to steal from the free market. It has to allocate capital, because the free market is a much better arbiter of value of what's going to win and not what's. But the government has to keep on reaching in to distort the free market. So it's something that, because of the structure of the system, has to get worse, and that's where we are today.
Do you believe, so in history, this has repeated itself over and over again, right? Money starts off relatively sound, and then over the decades, they start cutting corners every so little, but it starts to accumulate. So is this, some people call it the crack of boom. I saw Rand Paul say that the other day. Is this time any different?
What's different this time, what's really different this time is with Bitcoin, government can't run financial repression against you. So this time is very different from it's very different from a number of different reasons throughout history. But typically, if you follow Dalio would go, the US led that change in kind of 1800s, 90s, free market that driven around hard money than other economies. In a bunch of the technologies that were that built the U.S. into it, and now, if you follow Dalio would say now China is going to take that place. I don't believe that at all. I think we're living in a very different time, and Bitcoin provides a way from that financial repression for anyone on the planet because it's an open network. And it's a network effect, and in fact, will gain in strength and add more and more users to both Bitcoin as the asset, as the network and the protocol and the value driver on top of that, like Lightning. But everything else that's coming on top of Lightning is literally unstoppable. To me, it's literally unstoppable. So, yes, Bitcoin is so different. In these changes is solved through war, and the winner of the war writes history books, and resets the rules on typically hard money. We promise not to do it again, and then over time it happens again. Bitcoin provides a way out of that mess forever.
Yeah. So who stands? I come from the angle that everyone stands to win, but you know, power. In the eyes of a lot of these, I don't want to mention anyone specifically. I would just say power is alluring. So who stands to lose in a sound money system? And again, I don't know if lose is the correct word, right? But I'll preface it with this, Jeff. You know, Corey Clipson has the piece, A Race to Avoid the War. Michael Saylor said famously, I want to be a winner, not a martyr. Right. And then I'll add the recent moves by Elizabeth Warren taking advantage of the FTX blow up, right, to introduce this very hostile legislation that would force software developers to register with the state to write code. It's so absurd. Right. So what are your thoughts on this? Because and again, I'm in Bitcoin media, so I have to be a slave to the news cycle and pay attention to what is actually happening on a daily basis. And I see dark, ominous clouds on the horizon getting closer ever so slowly. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so, and I've said this on many podcasts, I wrote the book specifically because, and one of the chapters in The Price of Tomorrow focuses on us versus them and what ends up happening when you have broken money in a system like this, and how it's easy to turn people against people. In fact, even in the Bitcoin community, that happens because blame a system problem on people. It's easier to see a hero. It's easier to see hate. It's easier to actually drive more value to you if somebody else agrees with you about somebody else you hate. And so you can create a whole bunch of power or short-term power in social media by screaming at the clouds and what's happening in a system, but it's largely a system problem. Now, in that system, there's a whole bunch of people that lose. I would say, and then when I'm going to qualify lose. First, I'll say what I was going to say. So anybody who doesn't provide value to other people, they lose. If you're just a rent seeker on top of the system and you think your value comes from rent seeking or being political class by controlling a whole bunch of other people, you lose. Now, do you actually lose, or do you actually in a new system where productivity is flowing to the masses and over and over and over, and things are getting cheaper in your life at a continually, everyone's a winner because it incents human behavior that we cooperate. We're forced to cooperate, and we cooperate, and you see a totally different emergent complex behavior on top of if you want to talk about, if you're the wealth, then there's kind of political class, media and financial class that lose from this, unless they're hedging their bets on Bitcoin as well.
So, and they're obviously fighting it. They're fighting it tooth and nail. Does that worry you at all? And I'll tie this in with recent events, right? And again, guys, you know, we're completely politically neutral on Simply Bitcoin. We try to stay right down the middle. But the recent news that came out about the Twitter files, where it was confirmed that the U.S. government supposedly can't do this under the First Amendment, pressured a private company to censor American citizens. Is that a representation of what you're talking about?
It's exactly a representation of what I'm talking about. Now, remember, the system we live in, the system that you're talking about when you're listening to mainstream media, or largely any media, is the system we live in, we measure our world by, is 10,000 times bigger, four orders of magnitude bigger coin today. And so it has a much bigger impact on your life than. And maybe not all Bitcoiners, because there's a lot of people like me who are measuring value of Bitcoin or measuring my dominant currency is Bitcoin. And I think about Bitcoin, everything priced in Bitcoin. As you start to do that more, you start to you start to see this truth. If you're pricing everything out of the existing system, which 99% of population is, whatever that system is, whatever currency they're denominating in, they're also pricing the world, and that about money just being information. And if you manipulate money, you're manipulating information. And the world is misinformation, and they're all thinking that they have the answer in the misinformation, and there's getting pulled apart by my answer is the right answer, this answer is the right answer, and the whole system requires more manipulation. So obviously, more manipulation, you have to control the media channels, you have to control what people see, what they eat, what they do, what they talk about, you have to control it. It's just a structure of the information or misinformation in the system, but it is a 10,000 times bigger than Bitcoin is today. So obviously people are going to be confused in that world.
So the, you know, and some of the pushback that I've gotten online is, you know, it's good that some people got deplatformed. It's good that some people got censored because, you know, they were hurting other people with the misinformation. My response to that is you're really emboldening a group of people to have that power, and history has shown that that group of people will abuse that power for political means, right? So,
play what you just said forward with, like, we look at ChatGPT, right? We look at what's happening in artificial intelligence, and I wrote two chapters in the book about artificial intelligence. I'm really close to that sector, but just play a model where artificial intelligence and robotics are merging. And you could do anything better at some point. Doesn't have to be tomorrow, doesn't have to be, but the trend is that is removing all of labor. Now, if the thing that makes up our economies is the labor, and that gives us the money and that efficiency gain from robotics and artificial intelligence, as a couple of the technologies, not all the technologies that are coming, but a couple of the technologies remove that labor, then if the productivity gains from happening don't flow to society through deflation, what it means is you have to concentrate that up into a small group of people who make the rules for everybody else. And to do that, along the way, they have to remove every individual right and freedom you have along the way. So CBDCs is just a natural path in that centralization. All of these things are a natural path in that centralization. Because technology or innovation, what we do to try to solve problems, which cannot be stopped, is inherently deflationary. It should be making things better. If we're going to use that same technology, then, and that's what the free market says, then we're voting with our time to make lives better. So those two things are on a collision course. They've been on a collision course for a long time, but they're completely opposing forces. And one, and that in inflation is concentrating wealth, all of that product, all of those productivity gains in few hands because of that.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Jeff, do you, right? And I heard you talking about this too, right? It's the, and correct me if you think I'm wrong, it's the centralization versus decentralization. The natural path for them to maintain power, keep control, is more and more and more and more and more centralization. How long until this thing breaks? Like, and of course, this is a total like speculation. There's absolutely no way to know this, but I'm sure that you have some feelings about it.
It's already broken. Right? Why, even on these parts, I just spend more time in where the world's going. I get to work with the entrepreneurs, the building on decentralization, the building on top of Bitcoin. If you look at Nostr, what's happening there? Once these things happen, once the centralization has to deplatform one group of people, and if you get a different leader, that you deplatforms a different group of people, there is no way, there is no possible way to actually create a centralized system that works for everybody. So over time, these type of things go in waves, and a decentralized system has more innovation, right? If you just, here's an easy way to look at it. If you think of about a big company, and if anybody that's been listening to this has thought about working at a big company, what ends up happening is most of the times at a big company, the innovation gets stifled because of this, because of the centralization. A lot of people sitting around telling other people what to do, and the growth rate slows down typically. Now, that a monopoly can live for a long time because of the monopoly power, because of that, but it stops to work, it stops to innovate, and then it's open up, it's open to disruption from a nimble team that can move faster. And that's the same thing right now that's happening at money. It's happening to society in general, where you're moving from these centralized powers to decentralization, which is going to build more robust frameworks going forward.
So Jeff, my girlfriend, you know, she's a Bitcoiner or whatever, but one of the things, this was such an astute comment, right? Which is like, Nico, the incentives are better, everything's good, but people are stupid. And that was such a very powerful comment. And why I believed it was such a powerful comment, and I connected the dots, right? So Jeff, I've been educating people Bitcoin 6 years now. And one of the patterns that I've picked up is in developing world, pitching Bitcoin, in developed world, pitching Bitcoin is a lot more difficult than pitching Bitcoin in the developing world. In the developing world, it's more of a necessity. It's basically one of the best alternatives. And what I suspect is happening is that in the West, the bread and circuses are very powerful. The rails are developed enough, and the inflation is ever so slight, so people don't completely understand that they're being stolen from. Versus developing world, it's so blatant, right? That it's like, yeah, okay, I'm definitely gonna try something else. Does that worry you at all? That so much people are still asleep to the broken system, and they seek solutions in politics, right? So the Democratic Party in the United States blames the Republican Party. The Republican Party blames the Democratic Party, and everyone thinks it's the opposing party when in reality, it's the money printer. The system itself is broken, but no one really understands that. They're asleep to it.
The number one, monopolies fail from the furthest away. Typically, the people closest to monopoly win. All you're talking about in the game of in the monopoly of money is people in U.S., Canada, Europe, Japan are closer to the money printer than people in the global South. And typically those people don't see innovation or something that disrupts a monopoly as fast as others, because the people furthest away are hurt more. But if you run any single technology company, any single technology disruption, like use Kodak, for instance, Kodak tried to protect their film business because that's where they made the majority of the profits. And even though Steve Kodak invented the digital camera, went twice to his to the executives to try to say this is the future, Kodak was killed by the digital camera. And that's because the people furthest away use it first. And that's that's all that's happening here. So if U.S. isn't smart about this, if people, citizens in the U.S. aren't smart about this, this is going to be the greatest wealth transfer ever in history from the global north to the global south, because they have more benefit. And we see that in Ego Death Capital. We see some of where these companies that we're funding are being founded, and where these and what's happening all over the world. So it's unstoppable. The question is, how fast do people understand? I would go, Nico, to kind of what you said, but because I don't know if people are stupid. Yeah, I don't typically. It's easy to think that when you're understand both, you understand where we're going on the new system, and with what you do, with what I do, I have a front seat view of what's coming. So I'm not measuring where we are today. I'm measuring kind of the future that's being built onto this, and built onto this is a super powerful network effect. Now, remember the definition of a network effect. Network effect both on Bitcoin as the pristine bearer asset, but also network effect 2 and 3 and what's going to be built on top. The definition of a network effect is every additional user creates more value for all users. So it is clear that we have a network effect that's growing and getting stronger on Bitcoin, where every additional user is creating more values. And that's literally unstoppable. What's cool about it is it's unstoppable forever because of the design of the system. And we had a network effect on the US dollar for a long time that did create for each additional user, until a point where it had to be centralized, and so you start abusing money, and now it creates a negative network effect where it's actually by using it you're losing value. So it's not a network effect anymore. Still powerful for some time. It's not going to die tomorrow, but one failing makes the other stronger, and that network effect over time will just transition systems.
Do you think, and I just want to caveat, right? It wasn't me that said that, right? But her comment made me open my eyes to a lot of things that I've been noticing, right? So the Bread and Circuses comment about the developed world, I loved your answer. What do you have to say about, do you believe, you know, we described this in the Bitcoin community. I know Fediments is an attempt to solve this issue. Do you believe that people are willing to take personal responsibility and actually self-custody their Bitcoin? Because if they outsource that to somebody else, you could make the arguments that won't change. I think the change, and I would love to hear your thoughts on this, Jeff, is going to come from millions upon millions upon millions of individuals taking their wealth back into their own hands, right? And I think that's possible. You know, Bitcoin made that possible, and self-custody made that possible. What are your thoughts on that, Jeff?
I agree. I'd start it even at a higher level. I'd say the world we live in is a construct of an idea. And if we believe that, I mean, the global we believe that inflation is required for a productive economy, and we can win in that system, we will continue to advocate for that system and continue to build that system. And that's the system we live in. And if you, me, start spending more time in another system and build value in another system and create value in that other system that onboards millions and then billions of other people will live in that world. And it's just a different idea. And so it's all up to us. And the interesting thing, if you go back to that network effect, I know people don't see it yet, and they're measuring Bitcoin as the bearer asset without understanding the network effect on the second layer, Sediment or others, on all the value to come. So they're measuring it with a lag of what they thought it was, unable to see what it's turning into. And so on this transition, or a whole bunch of people in that transition, yes, some are going to trust because they always trusted a bank, and they trusted a bank that was destroying their value of their money and charging them fees to be able to do so. But they trusted other people, and this is such a change from that. They have to trust themselves and understand that. And now, I talk to a lot of these people every day, and I understand that you said earlier on how everybody comes into Bitcoin from a different view, and then something else clicks and something else clicks. And that's true for everybody. It's true for me. It's true for you. It's true for everybody you talk to. And some people just haven't gone down the rabbit hole as deep, and they haven't chosen to. For me, I've gone down the rabbit hole so deep, I've chosen to spend the majority of my time in this new system and chosen not to spend my time in the other system. But 5 years ago, I don't know if I would have been ready to, because I didn't know this. It was still there. I just didn't know it. And but that's actually what I'm talking about, the network effect. Now that I know it and I see that value, I'm one node. You're a node. We're all nodes. And that's creating more and more value for every new node and every new human being that starts to understand the system and how much value they can create it.
So, Jeff, I want to change it up on this and go. Did I hear something? Oh, sorry, that must have been me. So, Jeff, I want to ask you this. You're a successful entrepreneur. You led BuildDirect for 2 decades. How do you think that experience would have been different under a Bitcoin standard? You could make the argument that it would have been easier, maybe. Is that safe to say?
I don't know. That one specifically, I don't know. Trying to build essentially an Amazon of building supplies. I would have probably built one of the things that interesting in that build is, and I don't know if I knew this when I started, how much of the financial system that you're dealing with as well, how much of, as an entrepreneur, I have an idea and I can create value for other people. And if I create value, then I win too. But you don't realize when you're starting that business, how much of the meta level that you're playing in. And if you didn't raise money in the right time, then you're going to get killed by competitors who did. And then that window closes because of Nate or something else, and you get wiped out on the other side. So I didn't realize the meta level that I was playing in as well. You think you're just building a business and you think you're free market. It was anything but. So the businesses built in the Bitcoin ecosystem are going to be different in this way. It's going to be hard to build barriers to entry. And that means you're going to have to continue to provide value. And that value, because typically what happens in technology or anything, but price falls to its marginal cost of production. So price falling to its marginal cost of production, let's use AI. And if AI is free, then prices of a lot of things will be free. Same reason your calculator app is free on your phone is because I'm sure there's not a lot of entrepreneurs that want to create the next great calculator app because price falls to its marginal cost of production, which means in the Bitcoin system where that price is all and you can't build these giant moats around your business, and you're open up for attack from all different entrepreneurs if you try to create moats around your business, then you're going to have to create more value somewhere else. So it's a very different system than the system where I built that first technology company.
It almost sounds like you are basically taking away the ability, not you specifically, but Bitcoin or this new system takes away the ability to successfully rent seek, is what I'm hearing.
That's exactly what it does. You cannot, Bitcoin rewards the value creators, period.
So
as defined by other people utilizing that value.
This is fascinating. So if you can go back in time,
Jeff. Sorry, let me just finish that.
Go ahead.
Because that statement left alone will have a whole bunch of people scared to death as, what do I do? Well, what ends up happening to the rest of the things is prices fall to zero and your life gets cheaper and cheaper. So in one system, you have to work harder and harder to keep up with an inflation rate that's moving. You're on a mouse wheel moving faster and faster. And most people even listening to this can feel that system. They're having to work harder and harder for their money all the time. It never goes away. So it actually looks like modern day slavery from a system designed that way. The other way, it works the exact opposite. Over time, your time becomes more valuable. It doesn't go to free tomorrow of every single thing. It's a trend towards free of everything.
Got you. And it's amazing. So Jeff, right? If, again, hypothetical question, but I'm really interested. If you can go back in time and you were given a choice, right, in this magical land, and you were like, Jeff, what system would you prefer to build your business in and why? What system would you choose?
That's obvious. And because that's what I'm doing with all my time today. I'm betting on the builders. I'm spending the majority of my time in the Bitcoin system. So that's an easy choice. And so the benefit is you can create a whole bunch of value for people, but the value that you're creating also lets the world win and lets the world heal, because it is a system based on truth, hope, and abundance. That's the trend. That's where we're going. If we want to live in that world, then we each have the choice to spend more of our time in that system, building that system.
So, and this reminds me of this tweet that you made November 30th. It says, quote, "It is amazing to me how people could fully realize the system they relied on for their well-being was based on a hidden theft, but also concurrently believe that a system like that could be based on integrity." And I, of course, I didn't say it, so nicely put, like you said it, but I said, anyone who's defending government currencies has Stockholm syndrome. And to me, it's fascinating because you're attacking Bitcoin, but what you don't really, I mean, not you specifically, but people don't realize what it is they're actually defending.
Yeah, that I have a hard time with. And when I say I understand how hard what we're talking about is for people to first see it. But if you get through the first part, if the system is based on theft, so Lisbon say, most people will either have a pushback against that. But if they can overcome that pushback and actually realize that the system is based on theft, then the second question really becomes, do you bury your head in the sand and say, that's okay, somebody else has it? Or do you do something about it? And for the people, and what I love about the Bitcoiners is all of those people are doing something about it, every single one of them. And if you start doing something about it by just accumulating Bitcoin, that might be a start, and that might help. But then you start to realize, wait, I could do more. I could build this, and I could create more value by doing more. Because I'm in front of the 99% of the people that don't know it yet. And I can build where we're going from this.
Absolutely. And you're speaking of this, and it also reminded me of another quote or tweet that you had. It said, if everyone who was out protesting instead went and bought Bitcoin, it would all be over very quickly. I would add to that and say, and if they took self-custody of their Bitcoin.
Right.
So could you explain why it'd be over so quickly?
Yeah, because it would remove the power from the state to manipulate money. The system would change faster. We're dealing with a system that's 10,000 times bigger, that we're in, that the things that we're doing, marching, yelling at Powell, doing all of these things are just making or actually driving against Democrats either side, getting our person elected. I'm a qualified Bitcoiner, but that whole theater of politics today, everything within that system is all giving more strength, yelling at that system, yelling at people within that system. Now, is just driving that system stronger and stronger. All the financialization of that system. I think 25% of the economy is built on financial markets today. And so it would be a system where 25% of all financial markets is essentially the financialization of markets. That is the market. And so people are looking inside that system and giving more power to talking heads within that system that all are making that system stronger. The faster they move the other system, the faster the other system builds.
Yeah. And so it's interesting, and I said this to you earlier, right, is that a lot of Bitcoiners, they come at it from different angles and they reach very similar conclusions. And at this point in the conversation, I had Matt Hill, which is the CEO of Start9, on the other day. And the argument that he had to make, because I told him, I was like, I'm disheartened. It is people like they just, you know, they're defending the dollar, they're defending the thing that's stealing from them. And they would rather live in that reality. And he told me something. He's like, Nico, the reality is that this transition might take, he specifically said, 3 generations to fully complete. And I don't know about you, Jeff, but maybe it's a long time, but specifically in the West, I see that as plausible. Maybe in the developing world, or you said the global South, that's a complete, you know, the most optimistic case, right, is the case of Nigeria, right? They're trying to roll out the CBDCs. No. Yep. And Bitcoin's popularity is just, it's just blowing up, right? So that, to me, it's like incentives are winning over coercion there. But people, again, and we were talking about this earlier, people in the West seem to be asleep. And then the argument that you were making was that the people farther away from the monopoly are going to be the ones looking for a better alternative first. Do you believe it's going to take that long? What are your thoughts on that?
I don't believe it'll take 3 generations. I also would qualify, I may be wrong. There's a couple things that could happen on the way through. Here's what I'd say is a probable case that I would say would happen on the way through. Some countries will denominate in Bitcoin. Some countries will denominate in fiat. Over time, and more countries will denominate in Bitcoin. And on top of that, more and more is coming on top of Bitcoin. And some of the companies that you're just beginning using on top of Bitcoin, using the rails, you won't even know, it'll fade off into the background. And that's going to provide more and more value to that whole ecosystem. It starts to break other currencies. Currencies will have a choice to, and if you tried to create a CBDC and a fiat currency based CBDC, which that's what it would look like outside of Bitcoin, then that's what would happen over time is you're going to be the real market rate globally will turn into Bitcoin. And if you tried to stop that in a country and tried to drive inflation, because that system would allow the productivity gains to be distributed to society. And if you tried to stop that in a country and do the opposite, it means your currency would fail faster. And that cycle, so that could take 10 years as that cycle one system's providing deflation, one's inflating against that, and people start to see behind the curtain faster, and more people, because Bitcoin's an open network, more and more people just start moving over, which would make other currencies fail faster. So that's what I would suspect is going to happen through this. And along the way, currencies might say, like, they're could really, I know this, I'm not in gold. I do see it as a plausible try. I don't think a lower probability. Some people would give that probability a lot, way higher odds, but you could reframe to gold as well. Now, to do that, you'd have to say, okay, China and Russia and Germany and the U.S. get together and say, here's what we're going to do to gold. I suspect that's not going to happen in this environment, and I suspect what's going to happen. In fact, I think a higher probability is that U.S. goes into Bitcoin earlier.
Mm. Why do you think that is, Jeff?
Because it's their only way to stop China from gaining that power.
Okay. This is very fascinating. So, Jeff, another thing that I've ran into during my rabbit hole journey of the last 6 months, really, is there is whole swaths of the population that really do believe in wealth redistribution, right? And if you put the taxation argument aside, a lot of people feel very passionate about that, so I'm not going to get into that, but the reality is that a lot of these things that they promise can't be paid for with tax revenue alone. A lot of it is paid for I would say a very big majority of it is paid for by deficit spending, money printing, right? And you can make the argument that printing money is a form of wealth redistribution, right? It's just, I think a lot of people don't, here's an $1,800 stimmy check. A lot of people don't like think about the consequences of being able to provide that to so many people in the public.
Yeah, well, it's just incentives. So if that incentive comes from theft, and that theft makes some people poorer and some people richer, that short-term incentive, most people, so the same people that are getting most hurt by this, what would they naturally do? So they would vote for a government who is going to give them more free money, unaware that free money is coming from their own pockets and making them poorer, or removing their individual, the end of that, removing their individual rights and freedoms along the way. That's where it's coming from. But it's why socialism rises. It's why socialism gets stronger and stronger. People are hurting, and they can't, those people won't invest. When you're in pain, when you're living your life in fear, you typically can't, you're trying to pay. You're trying to run from the lion. You're not higher order thinking. And what does the system look like? You're trying to feed your family. And in that environment where fear is dominant, if you look at media today, if you look at government today, if you look at, fear is dominant in society. And it's just dominant in society because a way to keep people in perpetual fear is they'll vote for you.
So, and that's something else that I've really ran into down the rabbit hole is Bitcoin even compatible with that philosophy? I do not think it is, right? I think it's an individual thing. And it makes it very difficult to implement that type of system, even with just the incentives provided by Bitcoin alone. And then, right, you can make the argument that in a way it is the natural enemy of that system. And if you look at what the Chinese Communist Party and their outlook on Bitcoin, right, it's already happening, right? They see the writings on the wall is what I'm trying to say.
So that system, and again, that's where you'd have to say, if a system was 10,000 times bigger than Bitcoin and everything in that system was going to go away, all of the power brokers in that system lot of power that they had from a new system. Would it be easier to tell yourself a lie that said, and it has to be me, I'm the one helping these people, those poor people at the bottom. Without me here, they wouldn't be helped. I'm the savior, I'm the hero. And it's easy. I think there's a lot of people in that existing system that actually believe that's true. And they believe it because they get so much feedback, positive response feedback or love from their base that tells them that without you, I would be lost. But it is based on a lie. It's based on the entire thing is based on a theft. And in that system, you have a whole bunch more people feeding back into that system to be able to rise to the top of a broken system. Bitcoin is exact system. It redistributes wealth through value. And if you don't provide value in that system, prices still fall for you. They fall everywhere for you.
Yeah.
So you have actually a redistribution of wealth to the value creators versus the rent seekers.
I completely agree, but I don't think they'll see it that way.
here's the thing. It doesn't matter. It actually it makes no difference. This transition is going to happen anyway. Mm. We will not live in the system we live in, because the system we live in, if you actually just played it to its finality, if we didn't go to war before, but we would. So the system we live in will destroy our world because we'll go to war before it. If we didn't go to war, pick the person sitting on top of AI and robotics, pick the face that you want to control all of society, to make all rules for society, because that's the way that system looks. The one person, not a whole bunch of people around that person, but pick the one person you want to consolidate all of the productive capacity of the world into, who makes the decisions for everybody else. That's what the society looks like, because technology will not stop. So that is the choice. And because that's the choice, people are eventually going to get this, right? It's going to get a lot worse for people depending on where they are in the world, but they're going to get this, and they're going to get that we have to separate money and state.
So you just said something very powerful, Jeff, and I'm going to translate it into Nico, right? You just said that Bitcoin saved humanity from slavery. That's essentially.
That's what it does. That's what it does. It allowed, and when you just said that, I feel like I've been saying the same thing forever. But sometimes when I say it, somebody else has the. But yes, that is exactly what it does, because our ideas are the society we live in. So when we all have all of those differentiating ideas compete, and we create more value, and then when we create more value, that competition, it destroys old monopolies, yes, but that competition of value in a free market is our living standards. It is one and the same. The value that we create is our living standards. So if you're going to rob that value created, which is deflationary, and you're going to steal that and transfer it to a smaller and smaller group of people who decide the rules for everybody else, then that's what society is going to look like. It's going to look like a very small one, eventually, person sitting on top of AI system that tells everybody in the world how much they can eat, what they can do, what their world looks like. I suspect there's no chance human beings will go along with that system. It's inevitable. It's just a matter of time. It's just how fast, who understands how fast, what do they do about it? How much time are they spend building the new system?
So do you believe in the theory presented in, you know, one of the most famous books for Bitcoiners, right? The Sovereign Individual. Do you believe in the case of we're going to see the death of politics, the death of the importance of politics, better said?
Yeah, so that's that's eventually what's going to happen is there's going to be a resurgence, a reemergence of truth in politics around the system. And right now you can see if Bitcoin isn't in this election or in upcoming one that where it's a swing vote, where if you're not a Bitcoiner, you won't get elected. It's coming soon. And that's going to come in a lot of different regions in the world. And what I said before is you're going to be electing governments that are telling you the truth. It's just unnatural.
That is so unbelievable at this moment, but I completely agree. I think the voter base is going to be so big that you're not, and you're already starting to see this. You're starting to see politicians that are running on the Bitcoin platform already. This is already happening.
It's already happening, and that'll just accelerate. And this, remember, this transition is going to take some time, and there's going to be a lot of things that are being thrown against this. But just for Bitcoiners, you would have to assume for something to withstand, right? We say TikTok next block is just protocol going, nothing stopping. If you look at adoption rates of people, not price, adoption rates of people, businesses being built to it, what's happening? It's exploding. How could you look at this system and realize a system that's 10,000 times bigger would have to do everything possible to try to kill it? And it keeps on getting stronger and stronger and stronger with more decentralized today, more secure today, more people growing exponentially, providing on a network effect that's providing more and more value. Yes, not everybody can see that value yet because all those companies aren't formed yet. So it's still early. But that value build, I cannot believe, if you see it, if you're inside it, I can't believe that I get to spend that much time inside it. Instead of in the existing world, because I cannot figure out how to create that type of value in the existing system.
So this new, you know, this new brave new world, oof, that we're heading into, Jeff, is the power structure going to be based on merit rather than, I don't know what else, but I don't know what it's based on today.
Yeah. So we have a lot of biases. Human beings have so many different biases that we take shortcuts so we don't have to work. So biases are a lot of short expert bias and where we trust an expert, or we have biases where we, if somebody has more money, we'll defer to their bias, their authority bias. And so biases that we have to work through, and those biases in the existing system might have protected us in the existing system. And then in the new system, a lot of those biases, you're going to have to remove those biases because it does come down to value. And you could create value wherever you are. It's a global equalizer. You now have, think about some of the other things that are happening. Cities had to be centralized. And when I say centralized, you had to run central power to cities to be able to have enough power for the city. So that means your energy systems had to be centralized and your communication systems. And then those cities outperformed, those bigger cities outperformed smaller regions because they had more humans connected trying new things. So they outperformed. Today, you could get a Starlink. You could have energy anywhere. You could, because Bitcoin is chasing decentralized energy. You can now start to decentralize that, and you can tie into the global talent pool from anywhere in the world and work at a Bitcoin company or a technology company from anywhere. And so what would a company look for? They would hire the best person anywhere in the world. And it doesn't matter where you are anymore. And so you don't need the city and all of the centralized offerings of the city to be able to plug in to the global talent pool to provide value. That change makes a whole bunch of other changes naturally happen. We're early in that change, but that that's part of this change that's happening.
It would lower wages in some countries and it would raise wages in another country.
Bingo. So you have Bitcoin, which is a neutral reserve currency, which will naturally do that over time.
Yeah. Well, Jeff, I really enjoyed this. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me today. What are some things that you're working on nowadays? Why don't you talk a little bit about Ego Death Capital?
That's getting a lot of my time. And it's getting a lot of my time because I'm enjoying it so much. So it's just, we've made 4 investments now. We're going to make a bunch more, but I think we've seen over 300 companies now, maybe 350 companies in the space on a lot of them. And just super, we can't say yes to everything, obviously. And we'll say no to things that will also win. We just have to, so it's not just necessity that because an entrepreneur has an idea and Ego Death doesn't invest in it, that it's not going to win. So we'll be wrong on things as well. But I cannot believe how exciting it is. I can't, some of this I could be careful how much I say, but I was with Obi on what's coming out on Fediment or Fedi. And it's just going to be very, very exciting. Lots of these companies that we're just really excited about what's happening.
That's absolutely awesome. Can I ask you about the name? Why did you name it Ego Death Capital?
The truth is, it wasn't even me who came up with the name. Nico came up with a name, and it was perfect. It fit perfect.
I find it really interesting, that name, and specifically what it does. Anyways, I really enjoyed this, Jeff. Thank you so much for joining me on Simply Bitcoin IRL. Guys, the live show will be back tomorrow, 12:15 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And of course, I'll put all of Jeff's info in the video description. Love you all. I'll see you tomorrow.
Thanks.